Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gokopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Tura Dham Ki Jai Abhadweep Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai Gandamai Jumuna Deva Ki Jai Bhakti Deva Ki Jai Tosti Maharani Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Lord Premalan All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Stavagala Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nati Nama. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pachani Nivasesa Sinirani Paskuchyade Sachani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavanchcha. Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Samsajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Padichana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalitam Shri Vishakam Vitam Shri Manchana Pachim Vishcha Kibisna Vyabhata Padichana Pavane YavashvOm Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Texas, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 4, Texts 9 through 12. Yatra vidruma sopana
Yatra vidruma sopana
Mahamara katabhuva
Mahamara katabhuva
Yatra svatika kudyani
Yatra svatika kudyani
Vaidurya stamba panchayai Punk Taya. Please chant.
Yatra vidruma sopana.
Yatra vidruma sopana.
Mahamarkata bhuva.
Mahamarkata bhuva.
Yatra svatika kudyani.
Yatra svatika kudyani.
Vaidurya stamba pankaya.
Yatra vidruma sopana
Yatra vidruma sopana
Mahamarkata bhavaha
Mahamarkata bhavaha
Yatra svatika kudyani
Yatra svatika kudyani
Vaidurya stamba pankaya
Vaidurya stamba pankaya
Yatra vidruma sopana
Mahamarkata bhuva
Yatra svatika kudyani Vaidurya stamba pankaya Yatra vidruma sopana
here. Yatra chitra vitanani padma raga sanani cha paya pena nibhashaya mukta dhamma parich chada kujadvir nupurar devya shabda yantya ihastata ratnastali shupashyanti sudati sundaram kam Tasmin Mahindra Bhavane Mahabalo Mahamana Nirji Chaloka Ikarat Reme Bivantyanangri Yuga Suradibi Pratapitar Ujita Chandashashanaha Yatra, where the residential quarters of King Indra Vidrumashopanaha.
Vidrumashopanaha.
Steps made of coral.
Steps made of coral.
Mahamarakata.
Mahamarakata.
Emerald.
Emerald.
Bhuvaha. Floors. Yatra.
Where?
Spatika. Crystal. Kudyani. Walls. Vaidurya. Of Vaidurya stone. Stamba. Of pillars. Panktayai. Lines. Yatra. Where? Chitra.
Wonderful.
Vitanani.
Canopies.
Padmaraga, bedecked with rubies,
Asanani,
seats,
cha,
also,
payaha,
of milk, pena,
the foam,
nipaha,
just like,
shayaha,
beds,
muktadama,
of pearls,
Parichadaha,
having borders,
Kujabhi,
jingling,
Nupurai,
with ankle bells,
Devyaha,
celestial ladies,
Shabdayantyaha, making sweet vibrations,
Itatataha,
here and there,
Ratnastalishu,
in places bedecked with jewels and gems. Pasyanti,
see.
Sudatihi,
having nice teeth.
Sundaram,
very beautiful.
Mukham,
faces.
Tasmin,
in that.
Mahendra Bhavane,
the residential quarters of the heavenly king.
Mahabalaha,
the most powerful.
Mahamanaha,
highly thoughtful.
Nirjita Lokaha,
having everyone under his control.
Ekarat,
the powerful dictator.
Reme,
enjoyed.
Abhivandya,
worshipped.
Angri Yugaha,
whose two feet,
Sura Adibihi,
by the demigods,
Pratapitai,
being disturbed,
Urjita,
more than expected,
Chanda,
severe,
Shashanaha,
who's ruling.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada.
The steps of King Indra's residence were made of coral. The floor was bedecked with invaluable emeralds. The walls were of crystal, and the columns of Vaidurya stone. The wonderful canopies were beautifully decorated. The seats were bedecked with rubies, and the silk bedding, as white as foam, was decorated with pearls. The ladies of the palace, who were blessed with beautiful teeth and the most wonderfully beautiful faces, walked here and there in the palace, their ankle bells tinkling melodiously, and saw their own beautiful reflections in the gems. The demigods, however, being very much oppressed, had to bow down and offer obeisances at the feet of Hiranyakashipu, who chastised the demigods very severely and for no reason. Thus, Hiranyakashipu lived in the palace and severely ruled everyone. So tell me something about Indra's palace.
Walls are crystal.
Walls are crystal, something else.
Floors
were jewels in the floor. What jewels in the floor?
Emeralds
in the floor. Pillars of Vaidurya stone. What else?
Entry steps are of coral.
Entry steps are of coral, yes.
Pearls on the bedding.
Pearls on the bedding. And the bedding's made of?
Silk.
White as milk.
As white as milk foam. What kind of jewels are in the seats?
Rubies.
Yes. Okay, and throughout the palace, who's walking throughout the palace?
Beautiful women.
They especially have very beautiful
teeth.
And they're wearing ankle bells that are jingling. Sounds like a nice place, huh? But what's happening there? Hiranyakashipu is doing what?
Chastising.
For?
Nothing.
For nothing. And chastising how?
Severely.
So you're in this place with coral steps and emeralds in the floor, like we have different colored marble in the floor. Could you imagine if the color, instead of just a different color of marble, it was emeralds? And those are the benches there, they're just wood and fabric. But imagine if you had benches inlaid with rubies, and I don't know what Vaidurya stone looks like, but columns made of, instead of just, this is probably concrete, huh? Fiberglass. Instead of fiberglass, they'd be made of Vaidurya stone. Right? And when you go to, I mean, the guest rooms here are the best in the world, I think, but they don't have silk bedding with real pearls. And today, if you buy pearls, you don't even buy real pearls. You know that? You buy cultured pearls, which are 90% plastic bead and 10% pearl over the plastic bead. Very rare in the world to get real pearls. So that they had real pearls on silk bedding. So very nice. But if somebody's yelling at you all the time and punishing you all the time for no reason, are you going to be happy? No. Was Hiranyakashipu happy? Was he happy? He had done so much austerities to gain this place. He got the place. Was he happy? How do we know he wasn't happy? Because he's always angry for nothing. Report. Hiranyakashipu was so powerful in the heavenly planets that all the demigods except Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu were forced to engage in his service. Indeed, they were afraid of being severely punished if they disobeyed him. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has compared Hiranyakashipu to Maharaj Vena, who was also atheistic and scornful of the ritualistic ceremonies mentioned in the Vedas. Yet Maharaj Vena was afraid of some of the great sages such as Bhrigu, whereas Hiranyakashipu ruled in such a way that everyone feared him but Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva. Hiranyakashipu was so alert against being burnt to ashes by the anger of great sages like Bhrigu that by dint of austerity he surpassed their power and placed even them under his subordination. So not only did he have a gorgeous place, but everybody was subordinate to him. It appears that even in the higher planetary systems to which people are promoted by pious activities, disturbances are created by asuras like Hiranyakashipu. No one in the three worlds can live in peace and prosperity without disturbance. Yatra vidrum asopana maha marakata bhuva yatra svati kudjani vaidurya stamba punktaya. The steps of King Indra's residence were made of coral. The floor was bedecked with invaluable emeralds. The walls were crystal and the columns of Vaidurya stone. The wonderful canopies were beautifully decorated. The seats were bedecked with rubies, and the silk bedding, as white as foam, was decorated with pearls. The ladies of the palace, who were blessed with beautiful teeth and the most wonderfully beautiful faces, walked here and there in the palace, their ankle bells tinkling melodiously, and saw their own beautiful reflections in the gems. The demigods, however, being very much oppressed, had to bow down and offer obeisances at the feet of Hiranyakashipu, who chastised the demigods very severely and for no reason. Thus, Hiranyakashipu lived in the palace and severely ruled everyone. So here we see two classes of fools, the demigods and the demons. The demigods, although they're devotees, they're Sakama devotees. And the demon is just Sakama. He's just simply full of desires. And as soon as you're full of desires, you don't have happiness within. You don't have happiness within. The demigods didn't have happiness because they're constantly being afraid of being punished without cause. So, I'm sure we've been in a situation where someone had power over us to punish us. In fact, all of us are in that situation all the time. There's somebody over us who has power to punish us. But if that person only punishes us with cause, at least we can figure out what the rules are. Krishna is called that. Krishna is called dependable. And Rupa Goswami explains that dependable means that the demons know if we follow the rules, Krishna's not going to punish us. It's not like this idea of God, that he just rewards people who like him and punishes people who don't like him. But there's rules in the universe. There's even subterranean heavenly planets for demons who follow the rules. In fact, Hiranyakashipu, by following the rules, although he's a demon, he was able to rule heaven. That's how things work. Krishna's dependable. But Hiranyakashipu wasn't that kind of ruler himself. He didn't have any rules. So I can think of times when I was under authorities where I knew what the parameters were. Right? Have you been under authorities like that? You knew what the rules were. They were laid out. Everything was clear. You knew if I did this, they'd be happy. If I did this, they'd be unhappy. Yes? Then you can be, relatively speaking, peaceful. But I've also been under authorities who were whimsical. Hopefully none of you have had that experience, but maybe you have. Maybe you've been under somebody who had some power over you, and you never knew what was going to make them angry. So I've had authorities like that. You just never knew. They could say, do this, do this, do this, and you do this, do this, and they still yell at you. Or they still deprive you in some way, or punish you in some way. And if you're living under such an authority, you're in a constant state of anxiety, fear, constant. So in our modern day, there are some countries like this. In fact, the dictators cannot rule by force, at least on the Earth planet. They're not able to rule by force. In order for a dictatorship to rule by force, they'd have to have two police officers for every citizen. They can't do that, so they rule by fear. And how do they rule by fear? One of the ways they rule by fear is by punishing people whimsically. Arresting people without cause or without stated cause. You know, your neighbor just gets arrested for nothing. You have no idea why they got arrested. The dictatorships were famous for this kind of thing. This is one reason why the American Constitution says that if you arrest somebody within a certain amount of time, you have to charge them with a specific crime. You can't just hold them. You can hold them for a little while, but you can't just hold them. I think 24 hours or 48 hours, something like that. You can't just go into somebody's residence without due cause. You can't have search and see. You have to have a search warrant. So why are these things there in our Constitution, right? It's a big thing right now, whether or not the government can spy on our emails and phone conversations without some cause to think that we're a criminal, whether they can just spy on everybody. So dictatorships work this way. I mean, because the American government is spying on everybody, we're terrified now to use certain words in our emails and phone calls, isn't it? You know, if you use certain terms, you know, if you say bomb or something, I'm afraid to make it on a recording, you know, you say bomb and then they're going to come and carry you away. So that's how the dictatorships work. The dictatorships work by fear. You just never know what's going to happen. You never even know how to behave. That's a horrible state of existence. If you're in such a state of anxiety, can you enjoy your crystal walls? Is that possible? Can you enjoy your ruby seats and your emerald floors and your own bodily beauty? Will you even notice them? Will you even notice that there are rubies in your seats and emeralds in your floors and that your teeth are nice? You won't even notice it. You'll be so absorbed in anxiety that at any moment the ruler can throw me in prison or whatever, without warning and without cause. So those who want to enjoy the material world, they're always in danger of being put into such a situation. Even Prabhupada says, if you're a demigod. And what about Hiranyakashipu? So it's miserable if somebody's going to yell at you for no reason, but it's even more miserable if you're the one punishing for no reason. So Hiranyakashipu works so hard. Right? Maybe we've also done this. We've worked so hard to get something. And when we got it, we weren't satisfied. He worked really hard. I mean, Hiranyakashipu worked much harder to get his position than I would guess any of us have worked in this life for anything. He had 100 years of the demigods. The demigods, one night is 365 days for us. That's their 24 hours. So 100 years like that. 100 years, how many of our earth years? A lot. He was just standing on his toes. Would any of us do that? Would we work that hard to be Krishna conscious? Probably not. Right? People struggle just to chant 16 rounds and follow four regulated principles. Just for, 50 years. Oh, I got to chant 16 rounds for 50 years. And people think 100 times about it, don't they? Do I really want to take that vow? Am I really going to be able to chant 16 rounds every day for 50 years? Am I really going to be able to give up, my whatever it is, my coffee? And big austerity. But what did Hiranyakashipu do? And he did so much. It was so extreme. He wasn't eating. And he was able to keep his life air circulating in his bones. It's inconceivable. And he got everything that he wanted. He had everyone in the universe except Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva under his control. He couldn't even be cursed by Brahmanas. It says here, Vaina could be cursed by Brahmanas. He couldn't even be cursed by Brahmanas. Of course, he could offend Vaishnavas, which is what he did. There was a loophole here that he missed. He wasn't thinking of that he could offend Vaishnava. And Prahlad Maharaj didn't curse him. Prahlad Maharaj wasn't even angry with him. But just the fact that he offended Vaishnava. Anyway, he got what he wanted. Everybody. He had basically no fear. All the power in the universe, more than Indra, actually, more, because he was above, he was ruling the rishis that are above Indra. Indra normally can also be cursed, like Brihaspati. He was offended with Indra and so many things. Now, if Hiranyakashipu was intelligent, he would have used all that in devotional service and made himself happy and made the universe happy. He could have done that, couldn't he? Certainly, he was the son of Kasyapa Muni, a great devotee. He certainly could have done that. But when he got what he worked for, he was miserable. I'm sure we've done that. I mean, I've done that. I've worked really, 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 really hard to get something, and once I get it, I'm miserable. It's not what I wanted. Hiranyakashipu got it, and it's not what he wanted. It didn't satisfy him. And the main evidence is that he's always angry with everybody. There's another evidence in the next verse that he's always intoxicated. The two main evidences that he was miserable. So this is one of the very important concepts for us as devotees of Krishna. The evidence, whether or not we've actually achieved spiritual life, one of the evidences is how we treat other people. How peaceful or how disturbed we are within our heart. It may look like externally, oh, we've achieved Krishna consciousness. Just like it looked like externally that Hiranyakashipu got everything that anybody could want in the material world. And he did. He had all the mystic power. I mean, he had everything. If you think of, all the material desires you could possibly have and put them all in one place, and he got everything. He got a beautiful, strong body that couldn't be damaged by anything, disease or enemies or weapons. He was the most powerful person. He couldn't have any enemy. He could control the weather, everything, adi atmik, adi daivik, adi bhotik. He could control all of those. He could control his body. He could control other living entities. He could control the environment. He was living in unimaginable opulence. Everything in the whole universe, practically speaking, was under his control. But he didn't achieve what he wanted. He didn't achieve peace. He He didn't achieve satisfaction. So it's not just in one's externals. How do we judge whether or not we're really achieving success? We really judge whether or not we're achieving success by our internal state, and one evidence of our internal state is how we treat others. It's a very strong evidence. You know, if you meet somebody like this, you immediately know that he's unhappy. Yes, isn't it? Immediately. If you meet somebody who's angry without reason, then you know this person has some internal problem. Isn't that a fact? When you get angry for a reason, that's normal. If somebody steals your money and you're upset, that's normal. But somebody's just walking on the road and you just start yelling at them. You know, like these people who go into some place and just shoot random people. They go into some airport and they don't even have a political agenda. Immediately, you know, there's something wrong inside of them, yes? Some dissatisfaction in their heart. Why would a satisfied person do that? So this teaches us, of course, not to look for our happiness externally. One of the lessons here is don't look for happiness externally. It doesn't percolate to the soul. It's all just on the surface. All these things, Hiranyakashipu God, even the demigods, they don't really touch the soul. It's something like getting opulence in a computer game. It has nothing to do with you. Or, you know, watching a movie of somebody who has opulence. It doesn't have anything to do with you. It's all superficial. Having a dream that you have opulence, I mean, it's meaningless. Or painting a picture, you know, creating a realistic picture on Photoshop or something, that here you are, you can look at the picture and say, oh, look at how much opulence. But, you know, you're not actually having it. The soul is not having any satisfaction. So that's the first lesson. But I think the more important lesson beyond that is that we can judge our advancement in Krishna consciousness. One of the ways, there's many ways, but one of the ways is by how we treat others. How easily we become disturbed. What kind of things disturb us. Just like very, very practical example, if you're healthy and everything's going fine in your life, then we have a higher degree of tolerance for difficulty. Have you noticed that? Yeah. But like if you're sick, you know, let's say you have a stomach ache and your stomach's just hurting and churning, and then some little things harder to tolerate. So for a long time I was trying to figure out, why is that? Why is it that, you know, if I have some bodily pain, that other people's behavior is harder to tolerate? And I think of it like, you know, conditioned soul has this limit. It's like we have this cup, and this is our limit of what we're able to tolerate. And if you already have some disease, it's like it's already mostly full. And so it doesn't take much for your toleration to overspill, isn't it? But the devotee, who's the real devotee, who's connected with Krishna, they don't have some kind of limit like that. Devotee can tolerate anything. They may get angry at someone for the benefit of that person out of love. That's another thing. Hanuman was angry at Ravana, out of compassion for Ravana. Just like if your child picks up a sharp knife, you may become angry because you love your child. Hey, stop that! Put that down! That's different. That's not your own toleration. Why can the devotee tolerate anything? I mean, in contrast, we're going to see Prahlad Maharaj, who never became angry at his father. Did he have cause? Wow, did he have cause? His father was trying to kill him for no reason whatsoever. Somebody's trying to kill you. Aren't you going to become angry? He never became angry. If someone even insults me, I can become angry, yes? But to speak of if someone's trying to kill me. So why does a devotee have no limit? Because a devotee is feeling full satisfaction inside. That's unlimited. The devotee is always the pure devotee. They're always feeling connected with Krishna. Therefore, their heart is overflowing with happiness and peace. They don't have some sort of boundary over which they, when they cross it, they become disturbed. So the more you're in the mode of goodness, it's like the bigger your container is. You know, if you're in the mode of ignorance, it's like you have a little, sewing? Thimble, thank you. It's like you have a little thimble, you know, as big as like a blackberry. A fruit. It's like you have a little thimble that's as big as a blackberry fruit, raspberry fruit. Of tolerance if you're in the mode of ignorance. Because if you're in the mode of ignorance, you're full of fear. Hiranyakashipu had nothing to fear, and yet he was full of fear. Why did he have to fear? What a fool. So someone in the mode of ignorance, some little tiny thing, and they become angry and they become violent. I don't know the percentage, but a lot of crimes are committed when somebody's intoxicated because it increases their ignorance. And when you're in the mode of ignorance, you're much more likely to be violent at slight things or even nothing. Then you come to the mode of passion. The mode of passion is righteousness, dharma. A person in the mode of passion has bigger tolerance. They have, you know, maybe like a cup. But we find the kings who are in the mode of passion, they also can get insulted and fight, sometimes over relatively small things, although they're much more tolerant than a criminal who's in the mode of ignorance. Then the mode of goodness, where you're interested in liberation and Brahman realization, then your tolerance is like a gallon, you know. But with all those, there's a limit. Because in all those situations, one's ultimately thinking, I'm dependent on something outside myself for my happiness. One can feel threatened. And it's so absurd that even if you have everything outside you for your happiness, you still feel threatened. So Hiranyakashipu had everything, there was nothing he lacked. Gross, subtle, and still he felt threatened. Still he was fearful. So as long as we identify with this body and mind, as long as we identify with the world, whether we're in passion, ignorance, goodness, we will have a limit. By coming to the higher modes, you can expand your degree of tolerance, but you don't. It's not unlimited. And one will reveal one's inner unhappiness by one's lack of tolerance. The greatness of a person can be estimated, Prabhupada says, by their ability to tolerate difficult situations. You can tell what mode of nature someone's in by how tolerant they are. Actually tolerant, not repression that explodes. I knew a couple who the wife divorced her husband after 10 years of marriage, and in those 10 years she never had an argument with her husband. And I asked her, why are you divorcing him? He was a nice man. And she said, all these years I've been angry, finally I couldn't take it anymore. So that's not tolerance. I mean, the man was completely bewildered. It's like, I had this wonderful marriage for 10 years. For 10 years my wife was always happy, and one day she was like a volcano. So that's not tolerance. Not... Tolerate. Explode. That's not tolerance. That's something else. Many people do that, by the way. A lot of parents do that with their children. So when we say we can estimate someone's greatness by their ability to tolerate provoking circumstances, it means by one's ability to stay peaceful. Where's one's limit? And we can gauge our own advancement. Is our limit rising? Genuinely rising. Are we genuinely able to stay peaceful and happy in more and more and more provoking circumstances? Is our border getting higher and higher and higher and higher? Does it take more and more and more and more to push us over the limit into fearfulness? And ultimately, one can judge one's ultimate Krishna consciousness as one has no limit. One can tolerate anything because one knows none of it has anything to do with me. It's nothing to do with me at all. I have everything I need internally. It just doesn't matter. Haridas Thakur wasn't disturbed by being beaten in 23 marketplaces. Why? Because he knew I'm not this body, I'm a soul. He was living in that. It wasn't a theoretical concept. Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj tells a story how in the former Soviet Union that he was starting to take up Krishna consciousness, and because of that he was getting into some trouble with the KGB. And he was very fearful, and he was wondering, maybe I shouldn't have taken up this Krishna consciousness. And he said he was talking to one devotee lady. He said she was very short and very small, very petite woman, very tiny little woman. And she looked at him and said, "Why are you afraid? You're a soul. Nobody can hurt you." And he said, "If this little tiny woman can be fearless, what's my problem?" And he said he immediately just let go of all of his anxiety. So when we find ourselves getting upset with other people, we should ask ourselves, to what extent am I being controlled by the modes of material nature? To what extent am I just fearful for my own peace, my own security, my own situation? And if someone else is acting like that, we should have compassion. Prahlad Maharaj had compassion for his father. Prahlad Maharaj did not want vengeance against his father. He wanted liberation with joy for his father. So if we see that someone else is getting angry without reason, that someone else is easily agitated by slight things, even though they may apparently be practicing Krishna consciousness. Remember, the demigods also there. They're also devotees. And we should have compassion. This means this person is suffering. And if we see ourselves doing it, we should stop. Say, wait a minute. This is coming from my own lack of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada wrote this wonderful letter that if you can't get along with others, it's due to your own lack of Krishna consciousness. He said, the neophyte devotees think that their problems are external to us, but that is not a fact. If one is really in touch with Krishna, one is not disturbed by anything. That doesn't mean you necessarily walk around in some sort of stupor, you know. I'm not disturbed by anything. And Srila Prabhupada wasn't like that. The Six Goswamis like that. We're not like that. But they were never disturbed. They never felt offended. They never felt insulted. They only used their anger in love for others' benefit. And this is a prime way of understanding our own mentality and how much we have advanced in Krishna consciousness. If we are frequently angry at others and irritated at others and criticizing others and our internal peace is getting disturbed by others, we can understand that we're functioning at a low level in the modes of material nature. This is also, I dare say, one way, I'm going to really take a risk here, that one way we can judge whether or not a person is really in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada says, if you're eating, you become satisfied. If you say, I'm eating, but I'm not satisfied, then either you're not really eating or you have parasites. So if somebody is always getting angry and always getting agitated and never tolerant and always criticizing, especially if they're doing it for no reason, I knew one member of our Hare Krishna movement who would just say things like, all the leaders are just criminals. I mean, there's no reason to say that. There was no evidence. All the leaders, I mean, absurd. So if someone's doing that kind of thing, you can understand they're not really practicing Krishna consciousness or they're committing some sort of offenses. And we've seen practically there are certain philosophies. I don't want to be too explicit here, but there's certain philosophies that people adopt that seem like they're Krishna conscious. But one of the things we see is that the people who adopt these philosophies become very angry and very critical. It's quite interesting. So that is a very strong piece of evidence. And if we find ourselves like that, we can make a resolution. You know, let me really try to find my peace in Krishna. Let me improve my genuine... Let me have compassion for others who are like this, and let me work on improving my genuine Krishna consciousness. And remember that no amount of rubies and emeralds and fame and power is going to make it for me. What's going to make it for me is my connection with Krishna. So questions, comments...
Chaitanya Charitamrita, this point is very nice. It says that the Krishna Bhakta Nishkam, Bhaiva Santa, Bhukti Mukti, Bhogi, Shakaliya Santa.
Yes, the Bhukti Mukti.
As we have that separate desire for
Bhukti Mukti, you cannot find peace. Ashanta. Is this all right? Otherwise, you should have found a problem.